You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2214 South Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
Hi, everyone.
I'm Annie.
My cell is going to be sharing with you tonight. We were tasked with talking about God's language of love, and I posed it to myself as, how do you experience God's love? Like, what does that look like for God to love you? My cell were kind of new, and it's been really fun to see everybody's view of the world, because it's all really, really different. And I think you'll see that tonight when we're all talking. So I'm really excited for you to kind of experience the wisdom and grace and love that I get to experience every week in our cell. So first up is James.
Hello, my name is James. Some people call me the man upstairs because I live upstairs, and no one has called me that ever, so you can start if you want. Got to admit, I'm pretty nerve-wracked about talking to you guys. The approach I took to this question of how I feel God's love is through stewardship. Let me just show you this picture. This is Zoe and our cat, Punk. Punk is a very special cat, and I was never a cat person, but he needed a home, and we took him in, and it really paid off, because you can see how much he loves Zoe, but he never does this to me, so I just kind of watch. I'm like, that's nice. Yeah, so stewardship, I just felt that that is how God communicates with me. That's the spiritual relief that I feel. That is the language that really, you know, talks to me, because I never hear voices. I don't have a spiritual side. I'm not prophetic. I don't have any of those kind of gifts. But what I do have is the ability to love people and to love things and to love nature and to love my cat, Punk, and Zoe, too. This verse, Genesis 2:15, would someone read that for me? Sorry, it's super long. So believe it or not, this applies more to just plants. I have a very special connection to tilling, not really at all. My mom made me do a lot of chores in the yard, and I resented it for a long time, especially because we lived on a very busy street in Pittsburgh, and everyone would see me working on the street, and they'd honk at me, or they'd say, I saw you working, and I'd be like, oh, why'd you say that? I was really embarrassed by that for some reason, like just, you know, raking leaves or whatever. But over the years, I grew an appreciation for it. And now I love raking leaves, but I live in South Philly, so I don't have to do that. Going back to Punk, sorry, I'm really disorganized. He is a super affectionate cat, and it's easy to be a caretaker for someone like that. He's also a really bitey cat if you give him too much affection. So, you know, this is... it's kind of hard to talk about this cat because I have so many mixed feelings about him. But I love him, and that's part of being a caretaker. I don't know how to wing this. I'm going to be honest. Okay, another way I feel God's love for me in my caretaking ability is through not just, you know, taking care of my cat or going for... you know, trash pickup events, is really just watering my plants upstairs. I have no green thumb. I've killed more plants than I wish to admit, but I really feel like he speaks to me through that. I remember when I was 11 or 12, I was at Boy Scout camp and we had a scavenger hunt, but it was to identify all the trees. And so I spent the whole week studying the different shapes of leaves and the type of bark they have. And by the end of the week, I could identify all of the leaves and the bark, and I got first place in that scavenger hunt. And since then, I'm not bragging, I know you might think I am, but since then, I have had such an attachment to nature and the trees and the lumber that trees produce. And because of that, I got into woodworking, and I was really spoken to by God when working with that. It just seemed like a moment of bliss when you're machining something, or you're milling a piece of lumber, or just taking care of the trees in your yard. Something that kind of gets me in trouble with my caretaking is that I tend to go a little too far, especially when I'm taking care of friends or family. I tend to give too much of myself, and then it kind of deafens me when I really just consume myself in being a caretaker. This week is a good example of it. I helped my friends refinish their house, and I've sanded a lot of floors, but I've never sanded a floor like this. It was paint and staples, and the house was sagging, so it was completely uneven, and there was a giant hole in the floor. And I really wanted to give these people a gift, and it started out really great up until the last day when it kind of got in the way of me prepping for this talk. And then I started to resent it. And that's a lesson that I've learned, is that I really cannot overextend myself. I really do love to give gifts and work for people and just help them out. But sometimes too much is too much. Lastly, caring for myself as my own caretaker is extremely important to me. Again, a lesson I've learned this week. Also, your mental health. I believe God intended for us to take care of ourselves in a way that we would take care of our family that we care about. I know it's easy to burn ourselves out, but yeah. Anyway, that's all I have. here is a much better part of the talk. Gina.
No. Thank you, Jane. Just going to check my Facebook status. No, I'm kidding. My thing is on here. No, really, I'm checking my Facebook. No. So, this is a story. This is a story about a practice I do that allows me to feel God's love for me by giving it out to others. Insert slide one. So my friend Michael, he used to be a health insurance broker. He has since, this was a job that my friend had for quite some time. He sold his house, and he went and traveled the world for the last 2 years. It was a pretty good house. So Michael was a health insurance broker, and his means of income was a monthly commission check, which was a percentage of the policies he sold. He loved those checks, and sometimes they were significant, and other months not so much, depending on how hard he had worked that month. He was constantly looking for those checks and would anguish over their amount, regardless of the figure. One day, Michael was in his friend's kitchen, and this was a close friend, and this friend was a salesman, and he worked on commission too. The friend opened an envelope and pulled out a check, and he looked at it and put it down. Michael couldn't resist. He could see that it read $1 million. He was floored, and he was like, whoa. He asked if what he had received was a commission, and then Fred was like, oh yeah, it was a really good month. Michael thought, that's a little more than a good month. And he was so envious, he couldn't contain himself and said, well, I want a $1 million check. I deserve that kind of check. And his friend said, you're right. You do deserve it, Michael. You work really hard. So Michael thought long and hard about it, and he went home, and he thought, first he thought, I didn't write this part, but here's the selfless part, he thought. I wonder how I would feel if I decided to be actively happy for my friend instead of angry and resentful about not getting my own $1 million check. And he thought, how do I get my $1 million check? Well, I'm going to be happy for my friend. He decided to feel happy for his friend and his good fortune, and he adopted that sensation of that feeling and what it felt like to receive something so generous via his friend's experience. Now, the feeling and actually getting are two different things, but the peace of mind, the happiness he has for his friend's good fortune, is contentment and peace, and that is actually something that eluded Michael for a long time, and Michael since he hadn't had it in ages, and he found that it was invaluable to him. Since I heard Michael tell his story, I thought, how would this work for me with something I wanted and desired so badly? And I've since adopted it as a practice for myself. I specifically and consciously do it when I see or hear how in love others are. There's Facebook and Instagram. They remind me daily. But instead of feeling resentment for what I don't have, I practice feeling other people's happiness and gratitude. And it is within that practice that I experience God's love for me. So for instance, I have a girlfriend who I adore. This is Sarah. And I have been alongside her through her dating horror stories. And I have plenty of my own. And since I don't have the stomach for it, I gave it a much needed break and let her do it. And I sympathize greatly with her throughout. She eventually found her perfect guy, who I also adore. She's met his parents. They bought a home together. And now we are almost engaged. I've chosen to adopt her happiness and her relationship so much that I speak to her in we. Are we going to dinner tonight? Is our boyfriend going to ask us to marry him? You might think it's creepy, but I keep it low key, and she thinks it's funny, but best of all, it brings us closer together as friends as we celebrate this love together. And more importantly, I find that this practice brings me closer to love and to experiencing the love that God has for me. By offering it back out, it fills me with true joy and happiness to know that I'm giving out a small human portion of what God feels for me. It's a profound feeling to know that I'm sending out the love of God in my small way that greatly inspires my friend and makes her shine. And in return, I feel the love and contentment God has for me 1 million times, if not infinitely more. So I hope this practice inspires you to seek out your $1 million love check and to feel the love God has for you. Ta-da! And now I'd like to call up Christina, right? Yeah, our birthday girl.
I hate public speaking so much.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna read mine word from word. All right. So, and I had slides, but then I had a big surprise birthday party today, and then I didn't get to put them in. So sorry. Okay. So, So for most of my life, I had no interest in God and even less interest in those who did. I watched the actions. I tend to cry. That's the bad part. So I'm going to try really hard not to do that. All right. I watched the actions of people who claimed to follow Jesus, and I was appalled by their hypocrisy and the damage that had been done in Christ's name. Racism, kill a queer for Christ. TV preachers with big hair and big churches bamboozling people for money while they lived in tacky mansions and drove around expensive cars. It was all a really sad joke to me. It wasn't until I was 38 that I came to know God. And it didn't happen without a fight. I had been going through a very difficult time, and I was trying to figure out my next steps in life when I heard something that shook me to the foundation of my being. There we go. And it said, I'm here. This was not an audible sound. No booming voice shouting from the clouds surrounded by lightning bolts, but a clear, solid, comforting declaration wrapped in grace and unconditional love. And I knew this was God. And my reaction was to run. This intense, pure love is too scary. I've never known it. I don't deserve it. I can't do enough to earn it. Yet to have it is all that I desire. I spent some time trying to erase this nagging pull that I felt, searching and researching different beliefs, religions, philosophies. But it would not leave me, and it only grew stronger. I remember feeling as though I was going to burst one night, and I was sitting at my desk in my bedroom in my apartment, and I just shouted, "Jesus!" in a total surrender. For me, this is where it starts. This is where I find God's love. This is where it grows, in that surrender. I often allow the world to deplete me as I foolishly cling and try to control it, hearing nothing but static and maybe my own voice. But Jesus continues to invite us into this surrender. "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Don't get me wrong, I see and hear and feel God's love through things like art, music, my work, prayer, usually after I stop talking, his creation, those who fight oppression, my marriage, and my cell group, which is on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock right around the corner at my house. In case you don't have a cell, hit me up. And speaking of my cell, just so a week and a half ago, Annie, our cell leader, told us that our cell was giving today's talk. And I immediately declared that I wouldn't be taking part because giving into my overwhelming fear of public speaking was more important than checking first with God about God. So it wasn't until yesterday that I surrendered and asked him what he thought. And I didn't like the answer, and so here I am. And so after hours of praying and writing, my thoughts and my words and my grammar might not be cohesive right now, but as I go through the process, I'm feeling God's love. For me, surrender is the place where God meets me. He sees me in all of my mess, no judgment, and he heals my brokenness, making me fall in love with him again and again and again.
I knew it was going to be a mistake to follow Christina, but we're going to go for it. So I think you're hearing this, you know, underlying message of love and how it's kind of surrounding us. I think just from James talking about it in creation, to finding it within us, to finding it in the relationships that we have with other people. And the way I related to this when I first thought about this topic was something that I'm actually probably like struggling the most with in my life right now. And God puts those things on your heart to then stand in front of 70 people and talk about it. So, and the way I really feel God's love and that feeling, that sensation is the idea of being held by him. And it's difficult for me to describe. And three stories, three instances throughout my life kind of came to mind. And so I was going to share those with you. The first one is a story about my grandmother. I grew up on a farm, most of my family around, like aunts, uncles, cousins, grandma, grandpa. My grandmother was like the center of it all, the matriarch. And she cooked for all of the men working in the field for lunch. She took care of her six youngest grandchildren at a time, all like under the age of five. And it was just this bountiful example of love. And that had a huge impact on me because I was a very independent, strong-willed person, still am. But I chose to go really far away for college. It's like, get me out of here. I need to be far away from this loving, caring, supportive family. So I was going to college in Nashville. It was about 12 hours from home. And on my like rare trips home, every time I would go to say goodbye to my grandmother, she would start to cry. So like her, you could just see like the tears welling up in her eyes. She would grab me like in this huge hug. This is me as a baby on her porch swing that's still there. I mean, she was a very easy person to hug, just like that soft, all-encompassing hug as she's like crying, saying goodbye to me. It could have been just for 2 weeks. Like I could have been like leaving after Thanksgiving, coming back for Christmas in 2 weeks, but it didn't matter. I was leaving, And she would tell me how proud she was of me. Just the phrase, she would say, like, "I just love ya," was her phrase every single time. And as independent and like self-sufficient as I was, this always got me. And as I got a little bit older and I was able to experience that emotional vulnerability with her, I cried too when I said goodbye to her. So that's my first example of this idea of an embrace. Second one happened, at the end of college. College was an amazing time for me. I had like my first real community. Friends, we were all challenging our childhood faith, doing it together, being in what my first real sense of community was. I graduated college and I was leaving. I was moving to Philadelphia, where I didn't know anyone. And I was 21. I was starting grad school. I was an emotional wreck. And this is a picture of me and my friend group in front of the house that a bunch of the guys lived in for most of college. And we had just graduated that day, and we had a big party at the house. And we went to a lake house, my friend's lake house, afterwards to have like our last hoorah together. And I had to leave early. I was going on a trip. And so I had to say goodbye to my best friends, to a boy I thought I was meant to be with for the rest of my life. And I was moving 1,000 miles away. And after I said all of my goodbyes, I crawled into the back of the car that we were driving back to Nashville in. A friend of a friend, I didn't really know her that well. I was hitching a ride back with her to Nashville. She could see all of the pain that I was experiencing, and she sat in the back seat with me and held me while I cried all 150 miles back to Nashville. And she'd probably laugh if I knew she knew I was telling this story, because we weren't that close. We don't talk now. But in that moment, it was this that instinct of love and feeling like I needed to be held and embraced in that really horrible, desperate moment of my life, because everything was about to change. Third story is a couple years ago. So this is my mom and my grandmother and my brother and sister in New Orleans. And that's me and my mom on our family farm. It was 2013. I was in my second year of medical school, and I got a phone call one day that my grandmother had been in a car accident. So she was traveling in one of the those like medical transport vans. She was going to a doctor's appointment or something. She was 80. And someone had ran a red light through the intersection and crashed into this van. And my grandmother was life flighted to the nearest trauma center, had like two broken legs, multiple injuries. I was here in Philly studying for a big test that I had in 2 days. And this wasn't the first time that year that we had had this series of like traumatic, life-changing phone calls in my family. So it was really familiar, but still really horrifying. I spent the next couple of weeks trying to balance school, this thing that really took up all of my time, and trying not to lose hold of this goal that I was working towards, being present for my family who was really hurting, also like managing my own grief. I had gone home initially and come back to Philly, and then eventually, after a couple weeks, my grandmother wasn't really getting better, and she came home on hospice. My mother called me like the day she died. It was a Friday morning, and I got on the train that day to go back to Western Pennsylvania. We went immediately to my grandmother's house, which was like the main farmhouse on the farm, living in the community that we live in. There was like neighbors and family friends just like pouring in and out of the door with food and their well wishes, and this wasn't even the funeral yet. This was just that day. I was holding it together pretty well, I thought. Like I like to do. Eventually it hit me that there was a lot that I needed to process. And I kind of ran out of the room and I went upstairs and sat in this old rocking chair, which my grandma had like 15, right? Like every relative, like great, great uncle or great grandmother had this like rocking chair. So there was like 15 of them in her house. But I sat in one of those and I let all of that just overwhelm me. The grief, the despair, the loss of losing her, I just let it overtake me. My mother, being the mother that she is, saw me leave this room, and she followed me upstairs. And seeing how upset I was, she said the words, "Annie, can I hold you?" My accomplished, self-sufficient, independent 23-year-old self crawled into my mother's arms, and she held me in that 100-year-old rocking chair as we grieved. And this feeling of being held in these really like emotional moments, right, when I found myself really vulnerable, is how I experienced God's love. Unfortunately or fortunately, I don't experience this level of vulnerability on a daily basis, but allowing my emotions and my experiences to, you know, of the sorrow, loneliness, joy, whatever's happening in that moment, to lead me into the arms of God and to be truly held in this infinite love is one of the biggest challenges on my faith journey right now. I learned from myself in the process of preparing this talk that God's love is really within us and surrounds us. We talked about a passage this past Wednesday when we were preparing for this that I wanted to kind of close with. It's from 1 John 4. I'll read it for you. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. This is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us of his Spirit, and we have seen and testified that the Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.